You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, it's time for the second hour of tonight's live broadcast. I'm James Edwards, along with Keith Alexander, and you're listening to the Political Cesspool this Saturday evening, July the 20th. What a busy first hour, and it's going to be an equally busy second hour. We've got a lot to talk about and not a lot of time to get to it. So let's go now to that rally. I guess you could just call it a campaign rally for Donald Trump.
North Carolina.
In North Carolina. Now, the thing that everybody in the media is talking about is the fact that when he mentioned Representative Ilhan Omar, the crowd began chanting, "Send her back." And Trump, to the chagrin of the anti-white hordes, did not admonish them as John McCain would have done. And this is supposed to be a bad thing.
Well, Mitt Romney,
Of course, anybody but Trump would have done it, and that's actually what we're the point here. Now, it is true that Trump tries to shield himself with this silly thing that his deal with Omar is that she's anti-Semitic, and that's his big gripe with her. But I don't think that's why the crowd is opposed to her. Even though he tries to work that in when he's criticizing her, because he thinks that's going to shield him in some way. But, of course, obviously that's not the case.
He pushes buttons. That's what he does. And furthermore, he doesn't counter. Richard Nixon ran into this type of opposition. He ran up the white flag and resigned as president. John McCain refuses to take the gloves off with Obama. Mike Pence would be cowardly and has been on numerous occasions. This is what the English ambassador to America was saying in that kerfuffle that rose about him last week. He said, this guy doesn't mind bad press, doesn't mind being castigated. See, Alex Acosta, the Secretary of Labor, regarding Jeffrey Epstein, he resigns. But Trump not only won't resign, he takes to Twitter and punches back like crazy.
This is the one thing, me and you were talking about before the show tonight that I want to bring up on the show. So we know that Trump has done very little of substance to help his base, but nobody in my lifetime has ever thrown. And I think he even
gets under their skin like he does.
I think he even throws. I don't want to say he throws more red meat than anybody else that's ever run in my lifetime. I mean, Pat Buchanan was up there. Pat Buchanan did it in a much more gentle
way. Well, I tell you, somebody that was before your lifetime that he reminds me of, and that's Spiro Agnew. And Spiro Agnew was being fed all of his best lines by Pat Buchanan.
Well, and that would seem to stand to make sense. But here, Brad Griffin and a lot of others have totally moved on from the president. I can't say I'm in his corner anymore, per se, but
he makes all the right enemies.
He makes the right enemies. Look, what he says is incredible. I love what he says, but when it gets down to it, is he really doing any more for us than Mitt Romney or John McCain? It's hard to argue that he's doing any more for us than Romney or McCain.
It's like Elvis, too much conversation, not enough action.
This is Brad Griffin writing for the Occidental Dissent website. The mainstream media is trying to rope us into the 2020 presidential election. It desperately wants to run the narrative that white nationalists are supporting Trump and Donald Trump's tweets are fueling the growth of white nationalism in America. We're not going to make the same mistake again. Trump is unworthy of our support. He is a con artist who BS'd his way to the presidency. The GOP took us for a ride in 2016 and 2018. Trump campaigned on one agenda for populist voters and governed for the donor class agenda. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Now, let me make a response to that. What would you rather have, Brad? Would you rather have an authentic AOC in the squad running America or a somewhat inauthentic Donald Trump? I think Donald Trump authentically thinks these things, but he either doesn't know or is strategically not on purpose putting these things into action. But on the other hand, having somebody that is bringing the left out, they're no longer obfuscating. One of Agnew's famous comments was, eschew obfuscation. He had a bumper sticker about that. And that's what he was saying. That's what the left does. They obfuscate. They have stopped obfuscating because of Trump, and they've come out. I mean, he just absolutely pushes all their buttons.
I'll give you that in a big way, Keith. I'll give you a point on that one. I see where Brad's coming from. He's not changing anything policy-wise as he could being the president. But I think you're right. I think that Trump does embolden the base, and we saw it there. I think that base, I think those people in that arena in North Carolina, if you had given them an up or down vote, should we deport all illegal aliens, they would have voted yes. So that what that goes to show me, and somebody tweeted this, and I retweeted it. He wrote, I'm not sure even who this person is, but it's a good point. Even after decades of racism propaganda, Americans would support mass deportations if we had real leaders willing to do it. So that's the thing. Trump is giving these people cover to be themselves, I guess you could say. And I guess that rhetoric, for what little it's worth in helping embolden some of his base, is better than what we would have gotten with anyone else.
Maybe it's incrementalism. We keep talking who's going to be Trump too, who's going to be the post-Trump Republican.
Well, that's
candidate.
Where it gets
maybe
hairy.
Maybe because of he's setting this table, he's moving us incrementally towards having someone that not only talks the talk but walks the walk as well.
I don't think that's going to – it doesn't appear that that will be the case. It appears as though right now – I think his shots at winning the midterm elections, or not the midterms rather, but his
2020
right, his reelection campaign is going to take a sharp hit because of his inability to stem the flow.
I think what's happening, what's shown with these people is when you say that he is emboldening white nationalists. People are discovering their inner white nationalists.
Well, this is what No. I see what you're saying, but that goes back to what we were talking about in the first hour. Everything I say on this show was conservative to CNN in 2007. Now it's white supremacist. Nothing has really changed except for the way that they define us. But see, these people, they wouldn't identify as being a white nationalist. I mean, hell, we don't even really like the term. But, I mean,
but
we are white and we are
nationalist. Send her back is racist.
That's just a pro-American.
Well, that's what they're saying.
That's just a pro-American position. And to be pro-American is to be pro-white.
You call it whatever you want to, but that's the way we feel.
They want to defend the America that they grew up in, which every people should have a right to do, to live in a nation that represents their people and their values.
Anybody that is not mentally ill doesn't hate themselves.
But you look at the rhetoric now, by the way. I mean, they are not calling me anything that they don't call the president. I mean, Donald Trump is a white supremacist. I mean, and they, all of these same outlets that call all of the people that we have on this show white supremacists, they are calling the president that. They are calling Border Patrol agents concentration camp guards. I mean, that's where the rhetoric is now.
They call Mike Pence that.
Yeah, a concentration camp guard is what they call a Border Patrol agent who is down there. You know, and the thing is, they shouldn't even be housing those people in those shelters. They should just kick them all back right across the border. That's what they should do. And for all these things, this grotesque media pulling on the heartstrings of good-natured people by saying they're separating families, the parents who brought those kids up are responsible for that. They are the ones who willingly and knowingly broke a law and knew in advance that if they got caught that this may happen, and they put their children into that position.
What's the alternative, to let every poor person in the world emigrate to America?
That's it. Well, anyway, we'll be back.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, "By having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. And you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, right, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
All right, to come back full circle on this whole media brouhaha surrounding the Squad, as they have now become known, here is Pat Buchanan, our true North Star and a man without whose impact there would be no TPC.
Keith Alexander and James Edwards would have been lost at sea, probably.
Like Captain Ahab. Anyway, here's what Pat wrote in response to everything we've been talking about tonight. President Donald Trump's playground taunt that the Squad of four new radical liberal House Democrats, all women of color, should go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came dominated this week's headlines. Yet those headlines smothered the deeper story. The Democrats are today using language to describe their own leaders, like Nancy Pelosi, that is similar to the language of 1960s radicals who denounced Democratic segregationist governors Ross Barnett and George Wallace. However, at a conference last weekend, and we just made mention of this, African-American Representative Ayanna Pressley declared, quote, "We don't need any more brown faces that don't want to be a brown voice. We don't need any more black faces that don't want to be a black voice," end quote. Donald Trump doubled down, tweeting, quote, "We all know that AOC, that's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and the crowd are a bunch of communists. They hate Israel." And I think that's what he wants to pretend he's more concerned about than the hatred of our own country. "They're calling our guards along the border concentration camp guards. And they accuse people who support Israel of doing it for the Benjamins." Well, even a blind hog finds that acorn, don't they, Keith? But anyway, Buchanan continues, "The four, AOC, Tlaib, Presley, and Omar, have no clout in the Democratic caucus, but because of the confrontations they have caused and the controversy they have created, they have a massive media following. Paradoxically," this is where it gets interesting, and I want you to respond to this, Keith, "their interest in winning cheers as the fighting arm of the Democratic Party coincide with the interests of Donald Trump." This is what you were talking about a moment ago. "He entertains and energizes his base by answering in kind their attacks on him and adopting an incendiary rhetoric of his own. He is now assuming the old America love it or leave it stance and going after the four women as anti-American ingrates. They, by calling Trump a criminal, racist, and fascist for whom impeachment proceedings should have begun months ago, elate and energize the outraged left of their party. Trump's attacks on Pelosi to stand with her severest critics forced her to reevaluate the race issue with this tweet, and this is what Pelosi wrote. Quote, when Trump tells the four American congresswomen to go back to their countries, he reaffirms his plan to make America great again, has always been about making America white again, end quote. We've already mentioned that tonight. Do the Democrats, Buchanan asks, believe that refighting the racial battles of the 1960s that were thought to have been resolved is a winning hand in 2020? Does Pelosi think that demeaning white America is going to rally Democratic voters? Observing the clash between Trump and these women, the rank and file of the Democratic Party are being forced to take sides. Many will inevitably side with the fighters as Democratic moderates appear timid and tepid. Trump is driving a wedge right through the Democratic Party between its moderate and militant wings. With his attacks over the last 48 hours, Trump has signaled whom he prefers as his opponent in 2020. It's not Biden, it's the squad. Sunday, Pelosi recited again her mantra, diversity is our strength. Unity is our power. But it sounded less like a proclamation than a plea. We see the diversity. Where's the unity? Well, I say, Keith, the only way Trump has a chance to win, because I think that Florida and Texas would most likely tip otherwise, is if he brings up his share of the white vote. And the only way I think he's going to be able to do it is by painting these people even more radical than they come across as being to begin with, which is pretty damn radical.
Well, I think that'd be almost impossible to paint them as being more radical than they actually are. Basically, what they're saying is that everything that has happened since the 50s,
or rather, I should say, he should show them as being as radical as they are. That's what I should have
exactly.
said.
Well, see, they would have you believe that there's been no progress made in America since the 50s and 60s on moving forward on the leftist agenda. They say that because there's still white people walking around healthy, wealthy, and wise in America. We're not living in plywood squatter camps like the white people in South Africa. And that's really the future that they want for us. And I think Americans, particularly American whites, are wising up to this. Now, it's right when people like Brad Griffin say that, Trump can be tarred with the brush with the complaint that found its way into the title of an Elvis Presley hit song back in the 60s, Too Much Conversation, Not Enough Action. But the conversation is what animates people and drives them to the polls. You're right. This is a godsend to Trump. The Mod Squad is the best thing that happened to his reelection prospects. But all of it will be of naught unless he gets William Barr and the Department of Justice strongly in harness to monitor and prevent electoral fraud, because there will be an incredible amount of electoral fraud on behalf of the Democrats. It's just part of their standard operating procedure. Asking them to be involved in an election and not commit electoral fraud is like asking a dog to pass a fire hydrant and not raise his leg. That's the way they operate. Now, that's one thing. The other thing is reapportionment is coming up. Will the Republicans have the guts to do things like redistrict Steve Cohen of Memphis?
Well, didn't the Supreme Court say they can't do it?
No, the Supreme Court said they could do it.
In Virginia, they weren't going to allow it.
Well, they weren't going to allow it, but then they said on the gerrymandering case that basically we're going to take a hands-off approach to gerrymandering. That's telling the Republican Tennessee legislature that they can go ahead and gerrymander Jim Cooper and Steve Cohen's out of their positions in Congress. And they could do that type of thing at urban areas throughout America. They could have an American flag motif, have horizontal lines, 9 of them for the 9 congressmen running from east to west in Tennessee. And that would basically neutralize these urban strongholds that were created under the Voting Rights Act to make sure that black people got elected. Well, black people haven't gotten elected. Jim Cooper in Nashville isn't black. And furthermore, Steve Cohen in Memphis isn't black. So that argument goes by the boards. Just make all of these congressional districts representative of all of Tennessee. And all of Tennessee is predominantly Republican. This is what the Republicans need to do. They need to do that. That way they take two members out of the Democratic majority in the House of Representatives right off the bat. They could do that throughout this country if they would grow a pair. This is what this is what the problem is. We have too many Republicans that will not grow a pair.
They're not going to grow a pair. These four women, I'll give them credit for this, they have bigger balls than white Republicans.
Well, white men Republicans. And see, that's it. But on the other hand, no one seems to have bigger balls than Trump. Trump will take them on where he rushes in where angels fear to tread.
Well, at least in his rhetoric, I will give you that.
His rhetoric is what drives people to the polls.
The only thing we can hope is that his rhetoric will have some ancillary benefit, that something will rise from the ashes of his campaign, of his presidency, which has not lived up to his promise as a result of the rhetoric that he gave.
Well, if he gets elected to a second term, he's basically got nothing to lose. They will come after him, just like they came after Richard Nixon.
Well, they tried to impeach him this week, you know, and it failed.
Well, the thing is, remember, the Democrats took over, the new left took over the Democratic Party in 68 with the Days of Rage in Chicago. And in 72, when Nixon came up for re-election, they ran the new leftists of their own, George McGovern. He lost in a historic 49-state-to-1 landslide. And then they got really busy on impeachment and, in effect, impeached Nixon. Watch for a replay of that after the 2020 election.
And we'll be right back.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Citing the need to debate the financial impacts from the bill, Senator Rand Paul has objected to fast-tracking the measure to provide health care to September 11th attack first responders who became sick after working at Ground Zero in New York. The Kentucky Republican stopping Democrats from unanimously passing the bill on a voice vote yesterday. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell says not to worry, it will eventually pass after the debate is over.
We're going to pass the 9/11 emergency bill, deal with this tragedy, and we will do that, and we will do it shortly.
Forecasters say there's a dangerous heat wave over two-thirds of the U.S. that will stretch through this weekend. Millions will swelter as temperatures top 100 degrees from the Midwest to the East Coast. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
This report is brought to you by Crescent Tools. Most toolboxes contain a crescent wrench, which tradesmen and DIYers have trusted for more than a century. But what many call a crescent wrench isn't always the real deal. The reason? True crescent wrenches are made by Crescent Tools, which started producing the adjustable wrench in 1907. However, few realize that Crescent is the brand, not the tool. Nor do they understand that Crescent makes more than just wrenches. Brendan Walsh, Director of Product Management at Crescent Tools.
What a person thinks is a crescent wrench may just be an adjustable wrench, and there's a difference. We've innovated the crescent wrench to meet the needs of today's tool user and have expanded to offer a solid crew of tools in addition to wrenches.
While wrenches are their signature products, Crescent manufactures 2,800 tools, including files, snips, storage cabinets, and measuring tapes, establishing Crescent Tools as one of the most respected professional hand tool brands in the world. So, the next time you reach into your toolbox, check to see if it's actually a crescent wrench or an imposter. For more information, visit www.crescenttool.com.
The acting Homeland Security chief giving a grave warning about the crisis at the southern border, as Kevin McAleenan says the U.S. is facing an unprecedented crisis, telling a congressional panel the numbers of migrants trying to enter the U.S. have been staggering, leading to that humanitarian crisis at the border. The Pentagon says an additional 2,100 troops will be heading to the border to support President Trump's immigration crackdown.
As NASA's marking 50 years since the historic first moon landing in 1969, NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine says the nation's focused on even bigger space achievements.
So here's the thing. I'm the first NASA administrator in history who was not alive the last time we landed on the moon.
Oh my goodness.
What we have to make sure we do is we have stunning achievements to inspire the next generation. And President Trump has put out very clearly that he wants to put an American flag on Mars.
USA Radio News. Oh yeah.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to our live broadcast for the evening of Saturday, July the 20th. Our featured guest this evening is Richard Spencer, who last appeared on my birthday broadcast, so that was only... well, just a little less than a month ago, but he's back again because he's making news in a big, big way this week as a result of having been featured on that very CNN package that Jake Tapper presented a couple of days ago, which we've been talking about at some length during tonight's program. So, Richard, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me back. I guess you've turned 29, so you're
That's right. I'm getting there, buddy. I'm on my way. But listen, the reaction to your appearance on CNN, and what a lot of people don't know, we did play the audio of that, so people are going to be well familiar of what we're talking about, so we don't have to go back into that. But you taped actually a 30-minute interview with the network, and they only played about 30 seconds of it. But it absolutely dominated Twitter that night. You were the number one trend on Twitter as a result of that appearance that you made on CNN. So we've unpacked a lot of some of the ancillary things associated with the broader topic, which was Trump's tweets against the squad, as it were. But what I wanted to bring you on specifically to talk about, and we can get your opinion on that other stuff too, but the reaction that elicited from, well, really everyone, but conservatives especially, and then, you know, the rest of the anti-white horde on Twitter. It was very different, not just back when I was regularly appearing on CNN, but even as recently as a couple of years ago. I know that David Duke was on with O'Reilly a couple of years ago. It was maybe a little bit longer than that. It was whenever Steve Scalise was being attacked for supposedly having attended one of David Duke's conferences. And Duke was on O'Reilly. And I remember watching it because I texted him as soon as it was over while he was still at the studio. And he was talking to O'Reilly. And no matter what O'Reilly asked him, David pulled up a copy of his book and just started plugging his book, no matter what was asked. And I was laughing about it afterwards. He goes, well, I can't make it any clearer than that. But the point of the matter is that did not elicit anything close to the reaction that you got. And I guess the question is, the discourse is really becoming very volatile, and it's changed significantly even to what our people were getting when they would make similar appearances not so long ago.
Right. Now, I don't want to bump my chest too much here, but I do think I had a very good appearance. And I think one of the reasons why it did generate a bit of hysteria, I mean, it generated hysterical reactions among the alt-right, these kind of pro-Trump, edgy people, you know, apparently, you know, think of themselves as edgy at least, and conservatives. I was denounced by Charlie Kirk and all these people, and then also liberals. I think one of the reasons is because I gave them a hot take in the sense that I broke through the usual polarization that we're used to, and that actually becomes really monotonous. And, you know, it's basically the left goes up and calls Trump racist, and then a pro-Trump Republican says, no, he's not. You're racist. No, I'm not. No, you're racist. And it maybe makes for, you know, high drama on MSNBC, but at the end of the day, it's stupid and boring. And, again, I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, but I was able to break out of that. And I said, look, if we have a casual definition of racism, of course what Trump said is racially charged at the very least. let's just stop pretending here. You know, you maybe this America, love it or leave it meme, that was certainly present in the 1960s. And at that point, it had less of a racial component, although it certainly had one. That was the, you know, the age of civil rights and et cetera. Now it really has a racial component. And what I'm saying is, look, I get it. There is a lot of real white anxiety about demographic displacement and about what the country is going to be like when Ilhan Omar and people like her are in charge, or at the very least, their political representatives. And I get that. But at the end of the day, Trump doesn't really address that. He's not going to do anything with it except tweet about it and evoke these emotions among his base. And at some point, we have to call him on that. At some point, we have to say, we see through this. You're throwing out some more red meat, some more Trump steaks, and we're not going to eat them anymore. We actually want to do we want to do something real. We want real action in terms of policy, or we want a real political organization like a party that really is about us and our future and our identity. That's what we want. I think we've passed through this era in which Trump's base kind of vulgar rants are actually doing something revolutionary. At this point, it's just more of the same. It's evoking emotions. It's triggering liberals. It's generating outrage. And it's actually not really helping us anymore. I think it is preventing us from moving forward as a movement of people who care about the future of white people. I do really believe that. I think it's become a block, a mental block and a political block. And we need to grow up.
Well, we were just having this conversation, my co-host and I, just a moment ago, on what, if any, positive effects can there be from Trump's red meat rhetoric without any action. And, of course, you know, one of the great and very legitimate concerns about Trump is that he has never mentioned the people who actually vote for him, the people who actually attend these rallies. He will tell you what he will do for the blacks, the gays, the whomever. He will never mention what he's going to do for the whites. And even in his condemnation of Omar. Yeah, go ahead, Richard.
I hate to interrupt. It's always about Zionism.
Well, that's what it was. I mean, that's what the thing. You know, he shielded his condemnation of Omar by saying, you know, she's anti-Semitic, and that's when the crowd burst into the send her back. But I don't think that the crowd was responding to the charge of anti-Semitism. I think it was more base than that.
Well, that might be true, but you know, words matter, and this equation of the demographic displacement is really bad because we might not be able to oppress the Palestinians for another 60 years. Or we might, golly, if AOC had her way, we wouldn't go to war with Iran. Like this kind of, I'm sorry to sound like a Marxist, this kind of false consciousness is toxic. And it is real. I agree with you. Like the people who go to Trump rallies, look, say what you want about them. They're decent people. They're responding to him. They're not cucked. They love America. They love themselves. I agree. But, you know, we need to be the one leading them and not these con men like Donald Trump. And when we say that, we want to say, you know, AOC, actually, AOC might be right about a few things. There's some people out there who are hurting in terms of wages, in terms of the opioid epidemic. And actually, I agree with her. We shouldn't go to war with Iran. But, you know,
well, we said this, Richard, we said this on your last appearance.
For American nation.
On your last appearance, we said exactly that. We said that the litmus on where we stand on any given issue should be the answer to the question, is it good for white people? And if the answer is yes, regardless of how society deems your answer to be, whether it's left or right, if it's good for whites, that's and yes, some of the things these people say, even though it's different than what the president would potentially say, could be what's best for us. So we need to have that synthesis, and we did touch on that last time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so again, this is what Trump is doing. It is a weird bait and switch where he's evoking white anxiety, which is justified, and he is channeling it towards Zionism. And it is explicit. This is not some interpretation that I have. This is explicitly, consciously what he is doing. And it absolutely needs to stop. This is not helping us. And it you know, it might have helped us at one point, but it is certainly not helping us now. We are over it.
Richard, Keith Alexander, the Odd Squad or the Squad or whatnot and their rants are really bringing the what I call the AWC, the anti-white coalition, out of the closet, though. And I think we moved from the diversity is our greatest strength argument to the browning of America. They are out of the closet with the browning of America, which is the de-whitening of America. And quite frankly, if Trump were not responding to it, these things would pass without comment. There's certainly not going to be anybody in the mainstream media, CNN, Fox, or anything else, that's really going to come out and say anything seriously challenging to it. Trump is shallow, but Trump does channel the angst of a lot of people with that.
And that's to Richard's point. He doesn't, maybe on an implicit level, if I can answer for you, Richard, because the music has begun, but we certainly need it to be channeled more explicitly, and it needs to be channeled by people who really have the ability to say it is for our people exclusively. We'll let Richard respond to it, though, when we come back.
Here on the Liberty News Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text F-I-G-H-T to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. DefendAPatriot.com.
Being there with your child and being there for your child are two completely different things. One denotes a simple presence, which is a start, but can also be accomplished by someone other than you.
Hey, can you help me with this algebra problem?
See, that sheep did a fine job of being there with the child, but it didn't do a very good job of being there for the child. Now listen to the difference an involved parent can make.
Hey, can you help me with this algebra problem?
I'm not very good at algebra, but do you have any English questions? Because I done real good in English.
Oh, Mom.
Okay, let's take a look.
Okay, so the algebra problem didn't get solved, but something better happened. Mom was there for her child. And when you're really there, they'll know how much you care. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. As a teenager, I gave my first public speech in my church. My hand shook, my heart pounded. I thought to myself, I can't do this, but somehow I did, and because I wanted to talk about things that were important, I persisted. I chided my church as a senior in high school for not seeming to care about the not yet born, for looking the other way, and for not taking a stand on life.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
I don't know if it's just me, but it feels like it's about 250 degrees in the studio tonight. But anyway, we are covering some very important points with Richard Spencer, and I really appreciate what he brought to the show in that last segment with regard to his commentary. Very important points indeed, and important perspectives. Now, Richard, I know that you're aware that last week the governor of Tennessee, Bill Lee, signed a proclamation declaring July 13th to be Nathan Bedford Forrest Day. Now, the reason I bring that up is this. That has been going on for decades in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. It's a state law. Every governor has to do that. They do it every year, and every year without fail, going back to the middle of the last century. So and everybody knows it happens. It's, in recent years, has gotten a smattering of local press and even maybe a couple of national press stories. But this year, it just blew up. I mean, it was a huge national crisis and a huge national controversy that this Tennessee governor did this, even though every governor of Tennessee has done that for years and years and years. Now, the reason I bring that up is the question is, why now? Why now? Because that's what I took away from the reaction to your appearance on CNN. You're a guy who has made hundreds and hundreds of interviews and appearances throughout your career. This was by no means the first time you've appeared on television. They cover you all the time. And so why now did they decide all of a sudden to shriek in such horror that a media outlet is covering you? And in answering why now, I would ask you, what does this portend for the atmosphere that will surround what's coming in 2020?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons was expressed by many of these alt-light, edgy commentators, and that was, we thought we had deplatformed Richard Spencer. We thought his 15 minutes were up, and he's back.
Their 15 minutes are up.
Right. Well, I hope so. they basically thought that they had deplatformed me, and they were mistaken. And you know, again, they basically sound like Antifa, and not just basically, they exactly sound like Antifa. There's no even pretense that we want free speech. It was, we thought we shut him down and he's back. CNN must be racist or some, you know, completely idiotic line like that. So I think that was part of it. I think the other thing, to go back to what I mentioned before, was that I was in that 30-second clip, I was actually saying something interesting. It wasn't what CNN expected. It was not what the producer expected when he called me, and I told him what I would say, and he was like, "Oh wow." He was like, "Okay, I'm going to go with it." You know, kind of thing. And I tried to break down the normal polarization which we see, which is, you know, Trump's racist, no he's not, you're racist. That basically sums up cable news debate, you know. And I broke it down, and you know, again, what I was hearing from Keith was kind of like, well, Richard, you're kind of going second level here. Maybe we should stay on first level so that we can kind of, you know, reach more people and say, yeah, Trump's good. He's tapped into something. And I get that. I think we can have multiple levels and people can do different things so long as we're not at each other's throats and we don't claim that, like, the guy doing this is preventing me from doing this.
Absolutely.
You know, look,
good point.
I'm a bit of a, yeah, whatever you would say, I'm a bit of a, you know, egghead or whatever. You know, I'm going to do second and third level stuff, but that doesn't mean that I'm a diminishing or attacking people who kind of talk to people where they are a little bit more. This is my place. It's what I do. And, you know, the left is very good at having a multi-layered message, where there's an academic left, there's a far left, far left street activist left, there's a, you know, boring Midwestern liberal left, there's a, you know, there's a mom and pop left, there's an artsy fartsy left, and they all can operate in unison. And I think that's how we have to be. What I've seen over the past year and a half is basically, you know, aspects of the alt-right attack other aspects as oh, you're preventing us from winning, or some nonsense like that. And there has to be a way for us to work in unison. We were working more or less in unison for around a year. I mean, it can be done. But last year and a half has kind of proven to me that I don't think it's going to happen again. But anyway, that's how the left operates, and we can operate that way with more discipline, and just generally, not just discipline, just more friendliness between everyone.
Well, Richard, I want to ask one more question. I want Keith to be able to get one more question in too. This is the one more thing I wanted to ask you about. Oh, and by the way, you know, you were talking about the things you said on CNN. For people who don't know how this works, they always do a pre-interview, and so you know, so they're not caught unawares. But the question I have is the vitriol surrounding the discourse that we have now in this country has really just fallen to very violent, almost certainly more confrontational than I've ever seen before. I mean, even if it's devolved to the point where, you know, Border Patrol guards are Nazis. Well, no, they're not. Yep. Democrats are the real Nazis. And so again, that was the argument being made by conservative media. By the way, the establishment media didn't really go after CNN for having you on. Now, a lot of liberals did on Twitter when it was trending, but it was mainly Daily Caller and some of these other second tier conservative media outlets that were saying CNN's the real racist for giving Richard a platform. But the question is, can any of this that we see, this developing hyper-vitriolic atmosphere that I think is going to make, as I said before, Trump versus Clinton look like a sorority house pillow fight, I think that the level of acrimony that we're going to see in the debate and discussion in 2020 and an election cycle is going to be unlike anything we've ever seen. Can any of this that's coming be good for whites? What can we make out of this that will be good for us going forward?
The only way that it's good for whites is if all of this energy is channeled in the right direction. And I would just once again warn people about how white anxiety can be channeled towards either Republican nonsense, Republican tax cuts, or Zionism. That is Jewish interest and not our interest. And we need to be aware of that. We can't just get all excited when there's some new race controversy. We have to be thinking a few steps ahead and seeing where this is being pushed. There was a man named Lee Atwater, who's a famous Republican political advisor, and he basically said at one point you could scream out the N-word and get votes. Now you have to talk about busing and schools, and he's like, now you can't even talk about that. Now you have to go really abstract and talk about tax cuts. What he was saying, is something that sometimes the liberals are right when they say that the Republican Party is evoking white anxiety in order to get votes. Like, they're not wrong about that, and we need to be aware. We don't want to go through another half century of white, real white, understandable, authentic white anxiety being channeled into Republican BS.
Yeah, Richard, this is Keith, and I agree. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have been getting those comments from the second tier of the leftist press if you had not been effective, and I'm glad you said what you did. All I'm saying is that I'm stepping back because don't want to miss the forest for the trees. All that the squad has done and Trump's reaction to it is making average Americans aware, possibly a lot of them for the first time, of the browning of America and the fact that that is the agenda. It's not just a consequence or a coincidence. That's what they intend to do. The anti-white coalition is working to marginalize white people. Like Kevin McAllister said in Home Alone, they want to make white people disappear. Like he said, I want to make my family disappear. And this is what we've got to, and this is a great opportunity for us because, you know, if it had not been for the squad and their outspokenness, and then on the other hand, Trump's lack of outspokenness in challenging them, I don't think this issue would have come up in such sharp focus.
Richard, we have only seconds remaining. I think what Trump has done in his reaction is probably better than what we would have gotten from McCain and Romney. And so perhaps there's some level of things we can have there. But you're right to your point. He is not properly channeling the discontent. And you got the last 30 seconds to yourself.
Yeah, sure. I would also mention, keep in mind, we can't get trapped in our own Twitter feeds and only think that what our friends are saying is what Americans are saying. Trump is alienating a tremendous amount of the white vote by engaging in these attacks and by associating the Republican Party and white interests with, you know, a war on Iran and Zionism and free markets and the Dow going up and so on. Keep in mind, suburban whites are abandoning the party. In 2010, the Republican Party got 65% of the white vote. That dropped precipitously to, 54 or something like that in 2018. So Trump has really alienated a lot of whites. And now, could we win them? I don't know. But could we present an authentic message that isn't wrapped in this Republican cage? I think we can.
Richard, fantastic conversation. Thanks so much for being with us tonight. Obviously, things will continue to evolve and break apart, I believe, and we will have you on continuously to talk about it. Richard Spencer, everybody, at richardbspencer.com. Take care, buddy.
Creative Destruction.
Radio Network.